Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Forecast is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 106. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson. Jeez, Tom, 106.
106.5 used to be my favorite radio station, KWK.
Oh, wow. It was also my favorite weight, but I was about 8 then, so.
Well, I was going to say, when were you 106? That would be unhealthy for a man your height.
Well, let me tell you something. I want to tell you the truth, and this is something I would not have predicted. So my best show is about predictions. But in 1987, when I was in high school, I was this height, 6'4", but I weighed 132 pounds.
Oh, yeah, so, I got you. I got you covered. I was 6'1", so I've never been 6'4", but I weighed 120 pounds.
See, we were just these skinny, wafery dudes floating around that would one day... The meeting of the minds would happen, and we would predict the future successfully week after week.
And this is the first day of a new era on Forecast. We've jiggered up the format. We'll explain that in a minute, but let's introduce our guest. Joining us from StarCast, the hosts of StarCast, first of all, Kyle Ferguson. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being with us.
Glad to be here.
And Garrett Weinzierl, also the host of StarCast.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you as well. And in 1987, I was being born.
Yeah. Ooh, so gross. He weighed a lot less than you.
To lead on to the wafery white dudes.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks you guys for joining us. I appreciate you taking the time to hang out and do some predictions. Like I said, it's a newer format. Forecast used to do 3 predictions from each guest. To give us a little more time to kick predictions around, we're now just going to go to Garrett for his predictions, and then, or actually, we'll start with Kyle. We'll go to Kyle for his predictions, and then Garrett for his predictions. Now, if they only have one, we'll just talk about that one. If they've got a couple, or maybe they think of one while they're talking about the first one, we'll give it a little more breathing room, right, Scott?
Yes, and the whole idea is to be able to let us not feel like, oh shoot, look what we've done with our middle of the show prediction. We've created some great conversation surrounding a really neat idea, and we haven't been able to really get our heads around it, or we haven't given it the time it really deserves. And we're pressured by the realities of life to move on to the next thing because we still have more predictions to get to. This will really give us some nice breathing room, and we'll still give us a chance to shoot off in directions we didn't expect. And I'm personally pretty stoked about it. So thank you, guests, for being here on our inaugural sort of, not relaunch, but, you know, our tweaking of the format. We're glad you guys could be here to try this with us.
Still 4 segments, though. The first segment, prediction from the listeners. Second segment, one of the guests. Third segment, other guest. Fourth segment, 4 questions. 4 questions, not going anywhere. So let's start with that prediction from listeners. Sean Burnett wrote in and said, here is my crazy-ass prediction. Sorry, Sean, we don't do that anymore. So we're skipping. No, no, no. He says, in the far, far future, once we have colonies in space and have been living there for a while, reality shows will still exist. The most popular shows will involve modern-day daredevils. There will be a show that pits people against each other to fly spaceships as close to the sun as possible. Think of it as a future chicken game, but the chicken, meaning the sun, will always win if you get too close. People will tune in every week to see if someone else has the guts or skill to fly closer than the record and possibly die or peel out at the last second.
Wow. This works with one important, I think, condition, and that is that it's going to have to be like professional racing or NASCAR or something, where it isn't just about the guy and him pushing the limits. It's going to be about his team and how well this year they've made their ship so that it can get that much closer or push the limits of the last record. So I don't think it's just there's always like the dead zone where no matter what, if you go past that, you're dead. Because then there's no fun in that. Eventually they'll find out what that is and everyone will be butting up against it with a few flukes maybe where somebody survives. What you need to do is keep pushing the potential Basically, it's like if we allowed performance-enhancing drugs to be legal in sports and professional sports, we kind of have the same thing. It wouldn't be all about just, well, what can the human body do? It's now what can the human body do as augmented by really smart, you know, biotech dudes and really smart teams of people who are pumping you full of stuff. It'd be the same thing for your ship. If your ship was better and your ship was made better than the one you had last year, perhaps you can eke another, you know, 12 milliseconds out of your time. And that would be a really fun competition to watch. In fact, you know, I think it's the only way to do it, because it can't just be, no matter what, as soon as we hit that point, we're dead. You can't regulate it too much to stop the ships being developed better. It has to be about the ships and them getting better.
I looked at this and I thought, okay, I like where he's going with it, but he kind of stopped before I was done. I was like, all right, closest to the sun. There you go. That's one. Maybe you get a season out of that, then people get bored. Or like some people are in the chat room are saying, once you get to the theoretical limit, I mean, how much closer are you going to get? That's it. Like, there's no more competition. But I like this idea of modern day daredevils or future day daredevils. So I was trying to think of what other sort of daredevil stunts you could do in spaceships in the future. Go ahead.
I mean, if you ever watched an episode of Star Trek, the only thing you do when you get close to the sun is time travel. So if anything, the reality show would be first to go the speed of light and time travel.
Well, actually, Kyle, in the episode Relics, inside the Dyson Sphere, Enterprise D had to stop before the photosphere, and there was no time travel involved, except for if you count Scotty being trapped in the pattern buffer.
Nerd.
I watched it last night just by total coincidence.
Funny, really?
That's the only reason I know that.
What a weird thing for you to watch just kind of randomly on
it. But no, you're right. It's always the slingshot effect, right? You go close to the sun, you go back in time.
Yeah. And I wanted nothing more than to come on the show and say that reality shows are going to end. But sadly, that is completely untrue. Just this morning, I saw an ad for a tattoo reality show where the stakes are high and the disasters are permanent and real.
Oh, wow. So not like it's not a Hervé Villechaize reality show. You're talking about like people tattooing each other. And if somebody messes up, they're scarred for life.
So I get all into that. Master or something, get a title,
great.
But yep.
That's
forever
great.
On someone's back.
All in.
Tattooing blindfolded? What's going on this show?
It does seem a little crazy, but sure.
Well, thinking about Star Trek, the Abrams Star Trek has space jumping. That could easily become some sort of reality show, some sort of competition.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited for when the change occurs where sports and competitions, like, it becomes okay to have them this life-threatening, like where the break happens. Like, yes, NASCAR is dangerous. People can die, but it's not like, oh, you turned too far to the left. It's a guaranteed death.
You burned up in the sun. Yeah,
exactly. So I'm curious about the shows that led up to this, where that disconnect happened in society, where we're okay watching people just bite it on television.
Maybe it's when we're able to back up our brains so that when we die, we can just be downloaded into a new body. No big deal.
Perfect. What's the closest thing we have now to this? I mean, I'm trying to think here. You can't count something like Fear Factor where I ate a pig anus and say, well, that put me close to death. It's got to be something we're really putting people at risk for life and limb. And I can't think of a show where they've gone far. Some of the Japanese game shows are pretty daring, but
racing, auto racing is pretty damn dangerous. It's not guaranteed dangerous like you're talking about, Garrett, but...
Yeah. Well, if Hollywood's going to lead the way, then the first thing they'll do is make convicts and, you know, death race sort of things happen. And we'll just use them.
Actually, do you ever watch the reality show about the climb of Mount Everest?
No.
That is one where there were real world implications. People lost fingers and such.
Oh, my gosh. When was this? What channel?
It was on the Travel Channel like 2 years ago during the holiday break. I watched it, and I can't remember the name of it. I'm sure somebody in the chat room probably will remember it. But it was a documentary slash done in kind of a slightly reality show style. So it wasn't as crass as a reality show, but they had a group of people that they followed from training through the base camps and then climbing. And a few of them, you know, sort of lost their minds and didn't follow directions and got frostbit. I don't think in this season anyone actually died, but it was pretty close.
Well, yeah, that's a life and death thing. I mean, getting to the first, you know, not this one, this, what do they call that? The first base camp is can be life threatening for those who aren't ready for it. So that kind of stuff is something where, see, what you'd have to do is that these competitions would still have to be, you know, people would have to willingly be involved. You can't just, right, you know, be a convict that gets pulled out and say, all right, here's a car, race until someone
dies. Not
the
Hunger Games.
Right. It can't be that. I think it has to be like you just said with this Everest deal. If people are signing up for it, they know what they're in for. They know what the risks are. That's infinitely more entertaining to me than somebody being forced into a situation where they may die and it's not their choice. If it's your choice and you still face those kinds of odds, that's reality shows. That's a show I could watch. I could get into that.
Anonymous person in chat room, Everest Beyond the Limit is the name of it.
Oh, is that what it's called? Okay, I'm going to check that out. I'll check it out.
App name.
Yeah.
Everything you just explained, just described, Scott, was kind of what I was hoping Survivor would be when it originally came out and they were kind of hyping up the show. Seems like forever ago now, but they made it seem like, oh, you know, they might starve to death. They have to, like, fight through the elements to survive and win. And then he got to it and it was just, you know, some naked old dude in a tree.
That's true. That was basically Pig Anus and Jeff Probst. That's your show. And that's not enough for me. I need more than those two things.
Naked Old Dude in a Tree is my Lindsey Buckingham cover band, by the way.
Lindsey Buckingham, what a weird thing to pull out of the sky. I love him. Anyway.
All right. Well, that's thank you, Sean, for that thought-provoking prediction. Send us your predictions, folks. Email them to us. forecastpodcast@gmail.com. That's FourCast podcast@gmail.com. Or you can post them up on the blog, forecastpodcast.com. This episode of Forecast brought to you by Netflix, streaming thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you instantly, meaning you can watch the movies that Scott Johnson covers on FilmSack.
Yeah, fantastic stuff on there. We just saw, what the heck was it last week? Oh, we watched Stripes, the Bill Murray comedy from the 80s. And it's fun to go back and see. Yeah, so you go back and see these old movies and you're not sure what holds up and what doesn't. Netflix just makes it so easy to
I should have forced my way onto that. Stripes was my favorite movie growing up.
Yeah, I would argue that your favorite movie growing up was the first half of Stripes. I would say that after this viewing
I
that I
saw.
No, I
the whole
recently.
German. I liked the whole thing, the whole German part.
Oh, it gets bad.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying it is good. I don't like. It's not my favorite movie anymore.
Right.
Like
in
junior high, I was like, yeah, Bill Murray is the man. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really, really good. And without Netflix, we'd have no way to watch this sort of stuff in the regularity that we do. It's fantastic.
I couldn't have thrown out that Relics thing at Kyle, the Star Trek reference earlier, if I hadn't been watching Star Trek The Next Generation on Netflix last night. So try it out for free. Netflix.com/twit. You get 30 days free if you're not a Netflix subscriber. Or if you are a Netflix subscriber and you know someone who isn't, pass along the URL to them. They can try it too. Netflix.com/twit. We thank them for their support of Forecast. All right, let's get into the main predicting. And Kyle, we're going to start with you. How many predictions do you have for us? Just the one?
Yeah, just the one.
All
one's
right.
Kind of, you know, out there. So
let's sink
I'll
our teeth
the main
into
one
it.
Here.
Yeah, yeah.
So I believe that by 2020, there won't be any passwords left in the world. It'll all be biometric data. There'll be a period of time where people can't afford, you know, the camera that scans your eyes or the hand palm that scans your fingers or even something that's going to take a bit of your blood. But what this is going to lead to is with advancements in eye surgery, LASIK, blood transfusions, there's going to be a wave of super criminals for a while that will pose a huge threat because everyone will know that these biometric data passwords are so efficient and good that no one will bother double checking it because they have the right eyes, the right blood, the right handprint.
So what do the supervillains do?
The super criminals are going to use LASIK eye surgery and blood transfusions to take on the biometric data of other people.
So they won't. I think what confused me for a second is I was expecting you to say they would go around stealing people's eyes and fingerprints, but you're just saying they'll just duplicate them.
Well, there's no use to pretending to be someone if everyone knows they're dead.
So, all right. So let's break this down a little bit. If a supervillain, because the desire is what? To live longer? Is that their ultimate goal? Because you got to give them a motive. What's their, as two-dimensional as it may always be for supervillains,
I think stealing
what is
money.
Their motive?
Stealing money.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because then, you know, you're living in an age where everything's online. So no one really knows what anyone looks like. So you can just pose as this very rich stockbroker with his eyes and his handprint and get away with all that stuff.
I see. Okay. So is this a permanent thing though? Like when they take on the handprint of, I don't know, Bill Gates and his retinas, do they become Bill Gates essentially security wise for the rest of their lives? Or are they constantly swapping this out? Is it them doing it or do they have people doing this for them? Like how deep does it go? How far down does this rabbit hole go?
I think it would be permanent because you have all the Hollywood stuff, like the hand stickers and the contacts. But I mean, if they're really going to make this technology, that stuff wouldn't work.
Mm. Well, 3D printing, Tom. Why not that? Why not
3D print? You're going to 3D print somebody's hand?
Well, yeah, because I mean, the technology right now is basic, but so were a lot of things before we fleshed them out. Why wouldn't flesh them out? That's funny. Why wouldn't we at some point have technology that could just replicate human flesh and be able to say, all right, well, I need a new pair of eyes. I mean, I'm thinking of the good use for this, not necessarily the supervillain use, but I need a new pair of eyes. There's some new eyes. They're custom made for me. You know, pop them in. I'm good. Maybe they still have to be surgically attached, but, you know, there's this way of reproducing human organism-based stuff. Why not? You know, why couldn't that be possible? Why couldn't I go buy that at Best Buy and plug in at home? Anyone can answer that. Doesn't matter who.
Why couldn't Scott buy that and plug it in at home? Why not?
It's a terrible question.
No one can tell you why.
If you've read the biggest scientific marvels of 2011, there's some disgusting stuff in there. But for the most part, if you want to grow a human organ, our current technology, you have to grow it inside of someone else. You can't do it inside a cow. You have to actually do it inside. There was one that was just really disgusting where someone had to grow a working eyeball and they used a part of the gums because the tooth hole, you know, where a tooth used to be, that's what they used to hold an eyeball. And they grew it there in that person's mouth.
How much did they pay to be the host for that? Because I got some loans I have to pay off.
Oh, dude. So where did they grow it? You said they grew it in his mouth?
Yeah.
Did you hear that right?
This guy was blind in one eye. So they were going to give him a brand new eyeball. And the way they made it was they got a small little camera. And to hold this tiny little camera in his eye socket, they removed a tooth and grew part of his gums to hold this tiny camera.
Oh my gosh. So that's more of an implant. I mean, that's like cybernetic. We're not talking about an actual fleshy eyeball. It's like he had to grow one in there. This is like a machine basically seeing for him, right?
Yeah.
Oh, weird, dude. Yeah, that's crazy. That's
some wicked stuff. I think the biometrics are going to be a problem with your 3D printing idea, Scott.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Because what they're going to do is they're going to be more sophisticated and look for, you know, a pulse or look for the ability. Yeah, I know that some of the iris recognition right now can't be fooled by a dead eyeball. I have been told. I haven't tried it.
Right.
But they say that, you know, the form of the cornea changes and they detect for that to make sure that it's actually, you know, in a living being.
Right. So you couldn't do like the Minority Report thing probably.
You
could
do a transplant.
Well.
You could gouge my eyes out and put them in someone else and then use that to
But having him in a baggie, having him in a baggie and holding it up to some kind of sensor is probably not.
I think they would work on that.
So these mice that they grow ears on, human ears on mice, that seems like, you know, we're going down that path. Why not? I'm not saying all our organs will grow on a mouse, but
we'll have to get into our computers using our ears.
No.
Earlobe print.
No. Wrong kind of mouse. But honestly, like when you see one of those mice walking around in its cage with a big human ear on it, I mean, it's a fully formed, fleshy, regular looking human ear. You could stick that on anyone's head and you'd say, oh, that's their ear. That seems like way down the road, like further down the road than maybe there's a huge block there. Maybe ears is as good as we can do. Because really it's just, you know, growing cartilage based on essentially a DNA blueprint. And maybe that's just much simpler. And I don't know enough about it to say, but that seems like a step in the direction that Kyle's talking about. And it can, I always think of these things like, how can they be nefarious in the future? Like, how can it be used for evil? And I don't know exactly what those ramifications are. Obviously, he's hinting at it with his prediction, but it seems like whenever we come up with a way to connect the world with the internet, the hackers, the mean hackers, the bad hackers, I know we don't like to use that word, and it's a different word for different meanings, but You know, people that want to ruin people, take their credit card information, fake their identity, they rise up and they latch onto the tech and they figure it out. The same thing will probably be true of, you know, building organs or figuring out ways to extend human life. And I don't know what those ways are yet, but those ways always kind of, those kind of things always freak me out a little bit. So we go from mice wearing an ear to, you know, new eyeball growing it in your mouth, popping it in your socket. We're probably looking at, what, hundreds of years, Kyle? What would you say? What date would you put on this prediction?
I mean, according to IBM, they're saying that biometric data is going to replace all passwords. Their prediction is 2017, which is really soon, like right around the corner.
Yeah, it is.
And do you figure there's going to be some time where it's going to be too expensive for everyone and not everyone can have it. And then there's a whole period of time where, you know, it's got to be advanced enough where everyone gets comfortable using it. But there will be that period of comfort where everyone accepts it as completely infallible. And at that point is when these guys will be able to strike with their technology and, you know, mice ears.
I think it's got to be retina. There's no way to replicate a retina.
You sure?
That's what I'm reading right here at this on the internet. So it must be
on the internet. Yeah. Oh, so Garrett, I'm sorry, Garrett, you were going to say something.
I said to bring it back to how long these malicious hackers or thieves would have your identity. I can't imagine it being indefinite because if you are still alive and someone hacks your account, I can't see this being any more inconvenient than current day. Credit card theft, you know, so I get on, I notice that there's $300 charged to my account that I obviously didn't pay for, you know, that wasn't me. I just call the bank, prove that it's me. They shut it down and issue me new credentials.
Right. And not issue you new fingerprints or a new retina, but new credentials based on the fingerprint or the retina.
Yeah. Like a new account number or a new card and, or whatever the equivalent will be when this stuff is adopted
in 2017.
It's horrifying. You
know, fingerprints are pretty good, but one thing I was just reading, twins have very similar fingerprints, but they're not the same because of environment, because burns and nicks and cuts and things will affect the way the fingerprints look.
Are they otherwise identical though when they're born?
They're mostly identical. Yeah.
Huh. That's interesting.
So they could clone you to get your fingerprints, I guess, but not the retina.
That feeds into Kyle's dystopian vision, which is, you know, whenever you talk about supervillains, typically they've got janked up families, and so
they erase their fingerprints.
Yeah, they've got a twin somewhere who's nice and good, but you snuck into his room one night and burned his fingertips, and now, you know, that guy can't do anything about your evil way.
Natet in the chat room points out you still need a something you know component, so he's arguing for second factor authentication. Something is your fingerprints, your retina, etc. Then there should be a second factor, which is something you know.
And that'll be just like what we do now. Be dumb questions like, who was your favorite pet growing up?
Yeah.
So scan my eyes, scan my sweet fingerprints, and what's your dog's name? See, we really, the future is not all that different from today. It's what we've learned today, by the way, folks.
Except for the supervillains.
And the time travel around the sun.
And that too.
Yep, all that.
All right, Garrett, let's move on to your prediction, or predictions, however many you have. Lay them on us.
Well, I believe that within the next decade or so that we are going to see a entertainment plateau, whereas I believe that like 3D, HD, video game hardware, all of the superficial portions to how we enjoy our entertainment, it's going to plateau. It's like not going to get any better. CG is going to look as good as it's going to be able to look. Video games are going to look as nice and as high res as they possibly can. And 3D, at least I hope, will just have died off completely. And
do you think, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but do you think that this has been argued a lot about video games, that the reason that this particular cycle has gone on a little longer to get current about it is because we've hit a level of fidelity. While it's not as high as we can go, certainly, but we've hit a level of fidelity that has much longer legs because it's already out of the gate good enough to provide a really broad range of experiences. And I'm not just talking surface level visuals. I'm saying, you know, under the hood kind of stuff and what it's capable of doing. You can do a lot with what we have. Do you think that when we get to a point where everything's just photorealistic, you know, it's indiscernible on a screen, if we're still using screens, the difference between the character I'm running around and controlling versus me seeing someone do that in a real environment, is that the threshold? Will we have to be that far before we quit trying?
I think it could be a mix of that and then just hardware limitations, like just haven't quite figured out how to make technology that much better. But I mean, seeing as how good things are already, I think in 10 years we're going to be pretty stinking close to photorealism, and it's hopefully, and it could be another talking point, I think it might lead to more creativity in the industry. Whereas we stop buying games because of the shiniest, we start buying them because, oh, they have the best gameplay or the best story. And we're going to see a big innovation with the creativity within these different genres and industries. So you
also said, do you see these different forms of entertainment media merging then? Like becoming, so instead of, right now it's like, all right, well, there's movies, and then there's home movies or entertainment or whatever. There's TV, there's portable entertainment in the form of whatever it is we're using now, iPads and iPhones and Android phones and things. Right. And then there's video games, and those are broken up into, you know, three or four manufacturers who control the market of the main, you know, the core audience of console gaming. Then there's PCs, which is a whole different kind of animal. Is your future a future where all of these mediums no longer have not just competing platforms, but platforms all together are just sort of gone? It's a singularity, really, of platforms when it comes to entertainment. So the thing that is producing a film for you is the same thing that's producing a video game experience for you. And they're using the same technology to reproduce actors doing things and your character doing things and your ability to interact with that and play your music for you. I'm probably not articulating this in the way I mean to, but do you see what I'm saying? Do you see it as one big unified platform in this future?
I don't, in the way that I think you're trying to describe, saying that there is no more platform. There's just entertainment, and it's all these things, and we consume it through very similar means. I think we'll always have, we go, we watch a movie, or we come home and we play a video game. I don't think they'll be synonymous with one another in the future. However, what you were saying about how we use kind of the same technology to make these things, I mean, a lot of that already happens. You know, you have Maya and ZBrush and 3DS, you know, 3D Studio Max, which are used by both industries, both movies and video games, to accomplish similar goals.
Sure. But still companies providing a competitive environment where that's where the innovation is coming from. So in other words, this utopian future where the systems are sort of unified and we hit that plateau, it'll still be a company or a consortium of companies that are bringing us that innovation. It isn't like we're all of a sudden just going to become like Star Trek, which I think is an interesting conversation in itself. Maybe we want to talk about that a little bit here. But the idea that everybody quit competing in the future, according to Star Trek, it's an appropriate conversation to have on Forecast, I think. And we all just sort of pooled our resources and our energy and our talents, and we worked for the common good on everything. So if we innovate and build a new starship with great new warp technology that didn't exist in the last class, it's because for the common good of man and alien alike, and nobody made any money on it, and it was just this thing that we did. How does that fit within your vision of this future of entertainment?
I guess I'm a little more of a cynic because I can't see that ever happening. But I don't see that huge of a merge because I always think there will be somebody who thinks they can do one specific thing better than the company that's doing multiple things, and they're going to branch off, come out with the new video game system that only does video games, it doesn't do movies or anything like that, that all they work on is video games, and they're going to come out with this product, and it's going to excel because they put all of their resources into this, to making this one thing better than the previous.
Kyle, are you as equally as cynical about the future? Do you think mankind will never figure out a way to just make stuff because it's good for us instead of making stuff because it gives us a competitive advantage or makes us more money, makes us more powerful? How do you feel about the future of entertainment in that light?
Well, I'm certainly an optimist, but I think a lot of this comes from the need to make money. I mean, what happened with Avatar is everyone saw it, oh my goodness, it's the best movie ever, I love it. The 3D is what made it. is what many movie producers thought. So they made all these 3D movies, just throwing them at the market, thinking that was what made that movie great. And I mean, speaking of graphics, I can't ever see a time when graphics are not going to get better, because I remember seeing The Mummy and The Mummy Returns and just being like, man, that is as good as it's going to get. Like, that's the best. Look at The Rock's head on that scorpion body. That's the best thing ever.
Well, that's a good point, because I feel a similar reaction too to the idea. And I'm not saying that Garrett's going to be wrong. I think it's equally possible that we get to a plateau. But I always feel like every advance we make, we look at and say, my gosh, this is amazing. How everything else looks awful. And then after a while, we get used to it. HD is a great example. When I first saw HD, I was like, oh my gosh, it's like I can reach out and touch a flower. It's like I'm seeing it in real life. And then after a while, you start to realize the differences between that and real life. You start to adjust and go, well, yeah, actually, except that's a little wrong and the shadowing is a little off. And there's always going to be reality, right? And reality is 3D. So I put it to you, Garrett, because you were saying kind of poo-poo on 3D, which I totally agree with you, by the way. But do we have – can we plateau without conquering 3D? Wouldn't we have to have that sort of simulation where when you look at it, you see depth and you see reality for it to actually get to that we can't get any better level?
When I said it was going to plateau, I didn't mean that I didn't think it was going to get any better ever again. I was saying that the way we currently like the way we currently view progression is just higher resolution, better graphics, higher resolution, better graphics. Mm-hmm. The first thought that what sparked this was CES and like the 4K televisions. And it's just like, wow, that's nice. But does anyone really care?
You don't care until you go and see one, and then you're like, whoa.
Oh, yeah, then you care.
And you drool a little.
But see, I don't think you're wrong, Garrett. I think you're right that I get to, I mean, I've been through a bunch of these cycles, more than you. Yeah. When you were born, I was playing my NES going, it won't get any better. This thing is awesome, right?
Did we you just old man him?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I was playing NES before you were born.
I'm used to it at this point.
Yeah, I probably are. But you know what I mean? Like that seemed like the pinnacle of something, and it was. It was a great step forward. But then, right. You know, the 16-bit era came and we went, oh man, look at this. And I know we're not talking just about video games here, but they're a great sort of place to place this conversation, because it is all about that progression of technology. And then, you know, one year to the next, who looks better? Why do they look better? When do PCs start looking better than consoles? And then when are we waiting for the next console phase? And I've been through a bunch of these and been excited about everything coming next. This, I think, is the first time, and I'll admit, some of this might just be, you know, you get older and you start changing the way you view things, but this is the first time with whatever the next rollover is going to be where I'm kind of in that boat of going, oh man, we're going to do this again. Like, we're going to just keep doing this. Can't we just hit whatever our ultimate thing is and then just stay there? And, you know, I have friends who get conspiratorial about it and say, oh, we've been able to render stuff and, you know, make people look like they're real-time people for a long time, but they just trickle this stuff out to make more money. And I don't believe that either. But all of those things sort of taken into account kind of just make me grumpy about having to deal with this big new fight again and all this, you know, Coke versus Pepsi conversation that I'm going to have to deal with, you know, for the next generation and who's going to end up on top. And some of that's fun. And I like to follow the industry for some of those reasons. But as a player, I would love it if we could just say, put these little nodes on the side of your head. Welcome to the virtual world you're in. It's Lawnmower Man writ large, you know, and now it's all working and I don't have to think about it. I'm not going, ooh, the graphics are so much better on this PlayStation 8 than they are on that Xbox 9000. I don't have to talk about that anymore, you know?
A lot of it's going to come down to when these things stop being gimmicks and start being used correctly. Like the 3D, it's a great tool for helping an HD picture stay in focus. So I know because that thing is closest to the screen that he is important and I should be watching him instead of all the other stuff I can see in the background now.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think 3D, I kind of get where Garrett's coming from a little better now, which is 3D came out and we said, yeah, it's better, but we don't care. It's not being used properly in a lot of cases, as Kyle points out. And it's not enough better for us to really bother. Like we plop down our extra movie money for a while, but that's starting to tail off. So I think it's an interesting, it's a really much more interesting prediction to say, well, it's not that our technology will get to the point where we can't distinguish reality from film. It's that it'll get to a point where we don't care if it looks better. If we're looking at it and we're like, yeah, I guess it looks better, but you know what? It's not really worth the extra $1,000 for the new TV for me to upgrade to it. And yeah, that
I had.
Yeah, go ahead.
There was a kind of a second part to this prediction that was less cynical. I was in 10 years, maybe 10, maybe 20. We were going to hit this plateau, but it was going to lead to new stuff. I would like to see 3D. I want 3D as we know it to die off. This gimmicky kind of stupid,
yeah,
cheap thing. But I'd like to see it used. I'd like to see it develop more to where we see it in a UI sense, like we see in these ridiculous science fiction films, like what you see in Tony Stark's lab in Iron Man 1, where he can have he's drafting something on his computer, and then he can shoot it over to this weird 3D holograph type thing where you can see it at scale and how it would fit on his body. That's the type of stuff if we can get 3D technology to that point.
Without glasses.
Without glasses, because Tony Stark's not cool with red and blue glasses on.
No.
I'll take the minority gloves, which are kind of neat. The little
those are pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know what, though? We live in a really interesting era right now, and I feel like it's being understated what we might learn from the Kinect era. And I realize the Kinect is not all that it could be. I realize it's a little bit of a broken promise. It doesn't do exactly what they said, but it does do some pretty neat things given where we're at with motion sensing tech and that sort of stuff. I think we're in for a treat after the, even though it's way too expensive and kind of ridiculously priced, but when the PC version of that thing launches in, what is it, a month?
Yeah, February.
I really think we're going to see some crazy crap come out of the minds of the crowd. We're going to come up with hacks and stuff that are going to be unbelievable, things they couldn't do with the 360 version because there was, you know, too much rigmarole to get it to work. It's a slightly updated sensor. There's some other stuff going on there. I feel like that thing will be looked back upon one day, and I'm sure Microsoft hopes this, but they want to be able to look back on that and go, wow, remember that? That was a watershed moment that led to Tony Stark style standing in his thing, manipulating, you know, vector images in front of him in midair, having resistance to those images. I mean, I had this big conversation with my 11-year-old the other day while we're playing something on the Kinect, and I said, wouldn't it be cool if that little device was somehow generating electrostatic something in the air so that I could feel resistance in the air when I would, sort of make my motions. I would actually feel the things that I was supposed to be interacting with in maybe a subtle way at first, and that gets more refined as the years go on.
It's the holodeck.
Sure. I mean, really, it feels like prehistoric holodeck in a way. And I don't see any reason why. I mean, this is how all innovations come. We start with something small like that. It sparks some interest, imagination, and innovation. And pretty soon we're doing things like, you know, whatever the ultimate goal is. I mean, I remember seeing Microsoft Surface when they first showed that video a few years ago on YouTube, or it would have been, and now it's been a while, like early aughts, right? And you saw these guys doing this on this table, moving images, stretching stuff out, moving photos around, rotating them. And none of us thought that we'd have that in our hand anytime soon. But we all got iPhones and later other devices that suddenly that is a commonplace freaking thing. My daughter has one in high school. And she's moving things around on a screen in a way that if we really go back and think about what that looks like, then we would be jumping up and down about how far we've come. And so I feel like, you know, the Kinect represents a very early stage of what ultimately, Garrett, you're probably hoping for or wanting, which is, and I'm not trying to lay it all at the feet of one company. I don't think they're going to necessarily do it. I mean, heck, they had Surface, but everyone else beat them to the, you know, to the consumer punch with that technology or technology like it. So who knows who it'll be? And I honestly, who cares? But I do feel like at least we're putting our toe in the water. We're saying, look, here's a way to interact and do things. It doesn't necessarily address the whole, well, everything will become unified and we'll quit worrying about how much, you know, how good the graphics are. That's all tied to that. But, you know, I think this next console phase will be a longer phase, just like this last one was longer. The one before it was slightly longer. You know, we're just going to see that happen more and more until your prediction is realized and we're not worried about it anymore. And, you know, specific to gaming, but why not in other industries as well?
Do you think with control, because this was a trend we saw at the Consumer Electronics Show, a lot of people trying to build voice and gesture control into things like televisions. Do we ever lose the keyboard? as we get better and better at gesture control and voice recognition, and even and you know, people say, oh, well, you'll never want to do voice recognition for everything because you won't want to have to speak out loud in a, if you're in a crowded office. But there's actually technology that can read your lips and tell what you're saying, so you don't actually have to vocalize. You can just kind of, you know, mouth what you want to say.
What do you think, Garrett? What do you think about input that's not?
Do we still need that keyboard somehow?
Yeah.
I think it would have to be filed under the crazy predictions for how far in the future it would have to be, because the things that are critical, that are very important, I'm thinking, you know, medical computing devices where you need some type of tactile interface to work with. You need like a joystick and some buttons, because if you're telling this, you know, surgery arm what to do and it mishears you and guts your patient on the table, is going to be a lot of trouble.
I'd like to imagine that I'm never going to have that experience where I don't have any kids, but my kids know a piece of technology better than I do. And that's going to be one of them, 100%. I'm like, but I want my keyboard and my mouse. Why are you waving your hands about? This is all athletic. And I like the seclusion and niceness of the old system.
No, Grandpa, you just mouth backspace.
Exactly. Shut up, kid. I'm going to go hit level 200 and wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, classic. Wow, classic.
Well, classic. I don't play that new fang-dangled crap. It's got to be the old stuff.
But I don't play that Titan that finally came out this year.
I just think about the things that my dad thought were cool, like when he got his first slide projector, and I just remember going, man, whatever, Dad. This is not the pinnacle of anything. Like, then I somehow knew we were headed towards something bigger. And I can't even imagine. My kids look at things now and just must be, who knows what they're going to, a decade is so... So long. It's so short, but it's so long. In 10 years, I can't imagine what we're going to be doing.
Well, that's the thing, right?
Is usually entertainment or otherwise.
When you try to predict the future, you extrapolate from what you know. But what happens is the future throws something at you you didn't realize was going to happen and changes everything. I think, you know, things like smartphones are examples of that. We talked about wristwatches, you know, in Dick Tracy times. It was like, oh, we'll have a phone on your wrist. Well, nobody wants that, as we are finding out. Spot watches, even these new, like, you know, these new like nanos and stuff that you can wear on your wrist, kind of a gimmick. That's not what people want. But we find out, oh, well, what they do want is a little thing that they can pull out and it does like 100 million things. And I think we're probably missing something when we look forward on this. Maybe it's going to go straight to thought translation. I mean, we're already doing actual work where you can control a cursor on a screen with your mind. So,
right.
You know, given 10, 20 years, who's to say we won't be able to just like be able to use eyeball recognition that tells where you're looking and thought recognition to control a virtual keyboard, and you can just control everything by looking and thinking. You don't have to touch anything. Voice control, gesture control, all that just becomes optional if you need it for whatever you're playing. And like you say, you have a joystick because you want to have some kind of physical interface, but the dominant paradigm could just be thinking.
And ultimately, you have to go through a bunch of nano watches and a bunch of other bad ideas.
Right.
Game. Remember the game? What was it called? 3D game. What was the 3D Game Boy thing? The stupid
the
headset
virtual
thing?
Boy with virtual the Boy headset. You had to sit in, basically.
The red. Just the red. Death.
You got to make. You have to make mistake. I feel like that's just the world has to be just chock full of those mistakes before you hit pay dirt. And the way you hit pay dirt is you just keep, you know, you just keep littering the world with your failures until you figure it out. And, you know, where would we be without Mosaic? Well, a lot less further down the road with browser technology. But who knows who Mosaic is now and where the crap are they? I don't know. Tom actually probably knows. But
the browser?
They're not around anymore,
Mark,
are they?
Mark Andreessen. Mosaic was turned into Netscape. Netscape was turned into Mozilla. So every time you use Firefox, there you go.
Right. But see, that's my point is like, well, why aren't they, you know, what happened to Alta Vista? Well, they're still there.
Yeah, they actually they still exist.
Somebody came along and did it way better. And, you know, we may be saying the same conversation about Yahoo in a few years, what happens to them. But it's my point is
actually, AltaVista is owned by Yahoo.
Are they?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So you can fail, partially succeed, innovate, and then have someone take your steam away from you. It all leads to these things. And I personally look forward to Garrett's prediction because I feel like I'm tired of the rat race of who's doing it best. And I would rather get into the rat race of which experience is truly the most compelling, film or games or otherwise.
That's kind of where, you know, I didn't even think about this when I was writing up the prediction. That's kind of where we're at now, at least with consoles, because there's really no new ones on the horizon for at least 2 years. So all the games that are coming out right now, I mean, what one did we all go buy? We bought Skyrim because it was the most innovative. It was a hell of an awesome gameplay experience, and really the closest thing to a perfect RPG I played.
Yeah.
And the next console we're going to get is the Wii U, which frankly isn't going to be a powerhouse for graphics. I mean, it's going to look nice, but...
Yeah, and the first Wii kind of, you know, tripped out of the gate as far as graphics were concerned.
Yeah, exactly.
Granted, they fell in a huge, successful, muddy pile of money.
Yeah.
but as far as graphics were concerned, they kind of just tripped on the start.
I saw the Wii U Zelda HD footage at CES, and it was, if you're comparing it to Zelda and other Wii stuff, absolutely impressive. Looked fantastic. Right. If you're comparing it to other HD things you've seen, it was okay. A little few imperfections here and there. So, you know,
it's weird that they've almost embraced Garrett's prediction in a weird way at Nintendo. They've said, well, we'll go ahead and just not worry about pushing graphic envelope, and we're going to push gameplay envelope, and not, you know, let those other guys have that fight. And some say that's a big mistake for them. I kind of am in the camp that says that. But in another way, I can kind of see their point. They were kind of like, all right, well, we can make really compelling experiences. We hope third parties can. That didn't turn out to be so true. But Nintendo stuff was pretty much amazing out of the gate. They made some amazing games for that platform. It's maybe a handful. I can count them all on one hand, but they're really good experiences. And they were willing to ignore the graphics cap and say, we don't care about that. We just care about gameplay, gameplay first. And maybe that's where we have to get to. When at the very least, we get to a technical ceiling of some kind, we can at least then just focus on just gameplay first. And that's how you win these wars. That's how you get, you know, be the top seller or the top publisher or the whatever, is you just make the best freaking experience and not have that be so tied to how good does it look on my TV.
Yeah.
Well, you can't have your Star Trek world where there's no corporations and no one has jobs that they don't want and all this sort of thing. I guess Nintendo did do the right thing by saying, we're just going to market ours to family and kids, and we don't care about you super gamers out there. We know our market. They don't care that much about graphics. They want these experiences.
We just want to make games that are fun to play, and we'll try to win on that. It worked for them for a long time.
Yep.
Just didn't have quite as much staying power as having your network hacked. or Red Ring of Death or something.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. Something like that.
Wonderful highlights from the previous generation of consoles.
Time for four questions, Scott Johnson.
Yes, indeed. Four questions. That's where we ask our guests four questions, rapid fire style. They are not even the StarCast guys are allowed to think too hard about it. They must answer from the gut. I'm going to ask Kyle my questions. Kyle, are you sitting comfortably, sir?
I am.
Fantastic. Here's your first question. Would you rather be sucked up into a public transportation tube like Futurama or be teleported, but knowing there's always a 24% chance of failure in the teleportation technology? Teleportion.
Oh. Well, I'm in Chicago, so I know I would get stuck in traffic and slammed up against some guy's butt. But I've seen Timeline. I've seen the jumps. I've seen, you know, the veins not working. So I would gladly take that man's butt over my veins not lining up.
All right.
Traffic is backed up on the Eisenhower Express tube.
A teleportion is what would be sent of you if you're not careful. 24% chance. Let's move on to second question. What Terran StarCraft unit would you most like to own in real life?
Oh, man. Well,
in
I'd
the rear
to...
with the gear.
There's only one That's answer to this one. Question. God, Kyle, you fail.
I know. Well, I'd have to go with the battle cruiser so I could get around in that thing.
Mm. The correct answer is SCV, so you can get all your own crystals. Then you can buy everything, yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's kind of a trick question. Yeah, it's a trick question. Let's see. If you were forced to live in a first-person shooter world, which one of the current crop of FPSs in the history of games that we have would you choose?
Say Deer Hunter.
Now I'm only going to think that because that's the only one I don't personally die in. Well, at least to other people.
Right.
I'm sure. I get mauled by animals from time to time.
Yeah, but all you can do is hunt deer. That's it. That's all
Not
you do.
Not even bears? I don't even get like the orange shotgun in the hunting stores?
Nope. You shoot. It's going to be just antlers and bucks and doe. I guess you don't shoot doe, do you? I don't know. Whatever you do. I don't hunt. But that's all you get. Like, you go to Cabela's, you buy that 360 game for $4, that garbage game they put out there. That's all you'd ever have. So choose wisely. If that's your choice, it's cool. You're allowed. But I don't know if that's
well.
The
I'm
one
a
you
big
want.
Fan of not dying. So, and I like you know I'm a carnivore. So I'll have to agree with that one.
All right.
I've sullied your four questions now. I feel bad.
No, I like it. I like where that went. All right. Your last question is as follows. Which bothers you more, that insects will one day rule humans, or that in order to communicate with you, lots of them have to come together to form a big human-sized blob that crudely resembles our bodies?
They don't even turn into giant bugs?
No, they just are like I'm trying to think of what it's like. Have you seen that terrible Prius commercial where all the people get all, like, yes. There's like 20 people that make a big giant
horrifying.
Dude? I know, like, I don't like it at all.
Commercial, it gives me nightmares.
It's like that. Or the cover of the Books of Blood books from Clive Barker where all the bodies are making up a giant dude walking. It's like that.
I'm going to have bugs. To go with the bodies. Yeah, At least I know all the bugs are in one centralized place.
Right. And they would. And you know what? It's a nice gesture. They're forming a human-sized bug made of many bugs in order to come talk to you. They actually do want to extend a tentacle of peace at that point.
Yeah, if this was a true bug dictatorship, they would just form a giant bug and squash me.
Right.
Bugs have tentacles.
I meant antenna. What was I thinking?
And they do tentacles. Not have tentacles. They're bug-squid hybrids.
Well, they have tentacles, but they're made of many bugs to make a tentacle.
It's a bug squid.
There you go. There you have it. Those are my four questions, Kyle. Congratulations, you passed. Tom, over to you.
All right, Garrett, are you sitting comfortably?
As comfortable as I'm going to get, unless I can go lay down on the couch.
You're welcome to. But if you're comfortable, then we will begin. Question number one, if the possibility arises for you to be able to talk to your food and have it talk back, will you want to?
In no way, shape, or form.
No. not interested. The whole restaurant at the end of the universe, meet the cow before you eat it. Not going to happen for you.
I'm guilty enough. When I eat Taco Bell, I don't need the cow telling me I am a horrible person for eating it.
What if it was just, you know, like in restaurant, what if it was nice and was saying, no, I want to be eaten? Or it's a tomato plant that's like, you know, the freshest one of my tomatoes is right down here on the end of my limb.
I'm Mr. Taco. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah.
Well, maybe... Maybe when I was younger and I couldn't stand eating tomatoes and my parents were trying to make me eat them so I could at least bring the tomato into the conversation to help fight for me to not eat it.
I think that's
the reason I would want it to talk.
Well, that's one of the things that I hope we do in our political sphere here in the United States is bring the tomato into the conversation.
Right.
Tomatoes are people too.
No longer will they just be a fruit confused as a vegetable. They will actually have a voice, Tom.
Question number two. In 1,000 years, will cities be bigger, smaller, or gone?
In how many years?
1,000.
1,000 years.
1,000 years. So it's 2012? So 2112. No, wait, 3012. Sorry, I can't add.
Bigger, much, much bigger. I think to the brink of looking like the WALL-E movie.
Okay, so Coruscant, WALL-E, Megalopolis, entire world covered in city.
And lots of trash.
And trash, yeah. Well, because there won't be anywhere else to put the trash because...
Exactly, so we'll have to everywhere. Invent a race of adorable little robots with pet roaches that might, who knows, the roaches might conglomerate and talk to us.
Yeah, they might step on us as bug dictators. Question number three, when will man first leave the solar system and how will it happen?
I'm going to say in the year 30,500.
Like a freaking long time from now.
Very long time. And how will it happen?
Yeah. Spaceship, floating consciousness.
Another alien race will come and
capture us.
Well, I don't know about capture.
Evict us.
I like to think of aliens as friendly. So I think they're going to teach us, you know, teleportation
okay.
That was like first contact, like the Vulcans. They'll see us all having a campfire and go, hey, we should go back and talk to those guys.
Well, they'll invite us camping. Come to our planet. We'll roast wieners. Don't believe them, people.
Yeah, don't buy that one.
It's a trap.
Sounds fun. But
all right. No. And question number four, of course, it's got to be a StarCraft question on here. Will the first aliens we meet be more like Zerg or more like Protoss?
Great question.
I'm a big Ridley Scott fan, so I'm going to go with like Zerg.
Zerg. Mm. Yeah, of course.
You don't want them to, though.
No.
You want to meet like a Zeratul style character who's going
to be, like Protoss, but I think the chance of there being a parasitic type race a lot higher.
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
I agree.
Your future scares me.
Good answer. And that is it for four questions, and that it is for forecast.
That it is, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you both for joining us. I really appreciate you taking the time. It's been great meeting you guys, talking about the future with you. Kyle Ferguson, let folks know where they can find you online and all the stuff you do.
You can find me at The StarCast, the StarCraft podcast. You can also find me at Biggest Fan Podcast, where we follow the fad that's driving you mad.
And Twitter.com/KyleFerguson, two S's, right?
Yes, that makes it Scottish.
Ah, very nice. If it's not Scottish, it's crap.
That's right.
You, sir, are not crap. However, the rest of us are, because none of the others of us are Scottish. I don't think. Johnson, Indeed. Are you Scottish?
No, I am from a Swedish descent, actually.
Ah, okay.
Meatballs. Good. Woo!
And Garrett Weinzerl, maybe you have some Scottish, but your last name certainly isn't Scottish. You're also at thestarcast.com, but let us know where we can find you online as well.
You can find me on Twitter. It's at Garrett Art. And you can also find me on a few episodes of The Instance, The Old Republic Edition.
I've heard of that Indeed. Podcast.
He's constantly being referred to as our best guest. So no offense to everyone else out there who's been on there, or even Tom, who will future be on. But Garrett has got some cred, man. People really dig having him on there. I'm sure we'll see that happen again, Garrett. It's always good having you on there, as well as this show.
Good. I need to geek out about it.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Scott. Anything anything to tell folks about before we let everything go here?
Just that I know nobody who spends a week at CES who looks as good as you do and as rested as you do. Somehow you are able to push through the muck that is CES and somehow survive. So that impresses me. But I would also direct people's attention to the newly formatted or reformatted, I would call it minorly tweaked, version of our video game podcast on the Frog Pants Network called The Final Score. It airs on Fridays. We're now doing it live at 4 p.m. Mountain Time, which is, 5 Central, 6 Eastern. And we take your calls. We do live calls. We talk about the topics of the video game industry of the day. Reception to the new format has been very positive, and we just love to see more people there. So you can learn more about that and everything else going on over there at frogpants.com.
I have to say, I feel more like Frank the Mashed Potatoes in your comic this morning.
Do you a little bit?
Yeah.
The Baked Potato... clearly shocked at what can truly happen to his friends if he's not.
I've been mashed by CES.
You guys did amazing coverage. I'll just say this right now. Twit was the only coverage I cared about at CES, and you guys were awesome. The only part I didn't like is when you went black because of a power outage.
Yeah, I know. Right
last day. Right there, right when you had Patrick on and everything. But just, seriously, though, great coverage. You guys are taking it for the collective technology team out there who can't all go to CES. And, awesome job. You guys did good.
Well, thanks, Scott. Don't forget, folks, you can leave comments at our website, forecastpodcast.com. Send us an email to forecastpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your predictions so we can read them on the show. That's it for Forecast. We'll see you next time.
Tell me it's 32 years away.
Raise the roof, Garrett.
Dancing like a white boy.
Indeed.
Dancing like a white boy.